Welcome to the Tibbetts staff meeting, where we're going to talk about Iowa 7. And, well, just talk about Iowa 7 and find out what people like, what people don't like, how well it's working, what problems people are having, that kind of thing. So I think where I'd like to start off, actually, in asking folks is the visual interface. Very different. I mean, it's this whole big deal about how Apple is, in, you know, focusing on content, and it's flatter, but that's Apple apparently is not talking about it being flatter so much as Apple is talking about there being very intentional layers, things like that. And I'm curious, you know, Jeff, what are you seeing in terms of this? Is it better? Is it worse? Does it make any difference for your usage, or is it just different?
I think, well, it's definitely different. So let me start with a tiny story. I met a new dad. I have to go back even further. My daughter's in kindergarten. I met a new dad over the weekend, and he had just upgraded to iOS 7 like that morning and knew nothing about it. He just saw that there was an update. And, you know, he's like, do you know about iPhones? I was like, yeah. He's like, I don't know what to do with this because it was so different. You know, he was expecting it was like a security update or something like that. And so, like, it really threw him. And, like, it helped to tell him that, you know, like, basically most of the functionality is still the same. I mean, it looks very different. But, you know, I mean, like, you're still tapping apps. There's still, you know, folders, although those change a little bit too. But, you know, I think that it still works as a phone and as the iOS has worked before. So even though you might look at it and go, it's got so many bright colors and it looks so different, it's still the same underneath, and that's definitely helpful. I think as far as, like, you know, having the different layers and having, like, when you have something active, like, let's say, the notification center, the background blurs out a bit. I kind of like that.
I turned it off. Hated it.
Well.
hated it.
Hated it aesthetically or hated it for performance reasons?
Mostly aesthetically. It felt very muddy to me. It was like, okay, why do I have this ugly background now? And the same with Control Center. Luckily, that's something that's very easy to turn off in the settings general accessibility. You can turn off. You can click increase contrast, which shuts off some of that translucency stuff. Stephen Aquino did a really nice article for us on the vision control stuff, and that was one where I was going through editing his article and thinking, wow, I like this a lot better.
That's a great tip. I just did that. It's much better now.
I don't know.
It's sort of prettier. It probably depends a lot on what your wallpaper is for, like, or what app, like, what's showing through, whether it looks good or it just looks sort of, as Adam said, muddy.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of this stuff, though, where it's not clear to me if the changes improve functionality. I mean, Apple has talked a lot about how, oh, this gives you a sense of context of where you are. I'm not sure I buy that. That, you know, the Notification Center basically, I mean, I like the three tabs of today, all, and missed at the top, but as far as, you know, having a sense of context, no, it's still Notification Center. It's just like it always was. And, you know, and Control Center actually find a little... still a little frustrating. I haven't really kind of figured out Control Center. As much as I like the concept of it, I'm often not getting it when I want to.
I totally disagree, because I love being able to just swipe up from the bottom and have all of that stuff there.
The only thing I've used is the flashlight.
The flashlight is awesome. That makes the feature worth it right there.
The idea of context, though, is the fact that these layers float in front of something else you're already doing, so you know that you can get rid of it just by sliding it away and the other stuff comes back. That's what they mean by context.
But that's
it doesn't... I'm having just more larger conceptual problems with the whole thing, which is, on the one hand, it's supposed to be really cool that we've gotten rid of references to the real world. So buttons, you know, don't look like they're buttons anymore and all that. It's just sort of flat. But then we're supposed, then they've added in layers, which help us see that information does have this sort of physical aspect where one thing is above the other. And I myself am having trouble understanding why it is conceptually that certain kinds of things that look real, like a button you tap, is bad, but other things like layers of information that sort of slide out like semi-see-through pieces of paper are good. It feels almost like someone threw some darts and some ideas and then said, let's come up with a story for why this is the new thing.
It makes sense to me because it's more about internal consistency. So the transparencies, and of course I have to pull mine out and look at it as we're talking, but and the slides and the layers give you that sense of context of where you are within the actual functionality of the device without having to map that to the real world. So I don't think translucency is meant to...
But it's still saying, hey, this is an idea, this is a physical concept, that things are stacked on top of each other, well, which is a completely real world thing. Why do they have to be stacked on top of each other? Why not, you know, have them in a fan shape or, you know?
I mean, they could have made those choices. I mean, the one thing layered over something else, I think, is because it shows, in my head at least from a design perspective, that you are still in that app, and when you slide up a panel or you slide down a panel, you're changing that modality in either more of a permanent or more of a temporary way, and that's different than actually switching between apps. So that kind of works for me when you have that. So I slide up Control Center, you know, it's translucent, I know what's behind it, then I'm still in that app working on what I'm working on. Yet, if I'm in here and then I press the calculator button, it swaps over and there's an animation that I've now slid into another application because it's a single-use device at a time. And then I have to slide up or slide down again. So it's, you know, is this a temporary kind of a display within the context of what you're doing at that point in time, or have you actually completely switched context? It's sort of how I see that. And then the same thing, like the buttons and stuff, and we talked about that in some emails. That fine works for me because, I think we're the group of users that has been trained that something that looks like a button you press, and there's both generations on either side of us that aren't constrained by that modality. And so they'll just tap on anything. They don't care if it's a tappable word or if it's a tappable button or it's a tappable icon. They're just going to touch stuff until it works and it makes sense.
In fact, by losing the button framing and by making most of them action words, which is what the user interface guidelines are actually calling for, it becomes more explorable to some people. I know this one guy who's never understood the back button that looked just like an arrow pointing to the left at the top of the screen on his iPhone or iPod Touch. What does that mean? Where is that arrow pointing? What is it all about? But the word back, as a word, makes sense to him.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going back somewhere.
And I've also noticed that icons, when they're in use, for in large part, this is specific for Apple, but for example, if you are in, you know, Mail even, or some of the other apps, if you actually tap on an icon that isn't incredibly obvious, it brings up the words for what your options are. So if you hit the flag, it says flag, mark as unread, move to junk. It gives you those options. If you hit the move to folder, very obviously then is moving to move to folder modality. So when the icons aren't absolutely clear, like the trash can's pretty clear, but even like the reply button, that's a reply forward print, or there's the strange box for uploading things that nobody's quite figured out yet, which is replace the share sheets. If you click on that, it either pops up the share sheet or pops up text for your options.
Yeah,
so it's more of a gateway into those options. You see very few icons relatively that don't have words on them. And a great example of that, I think, is if you go into the music app, or is it the music app or the iTunes store, where they actually label, they have the icons with the text labels and smaller
it's
text.
It's the music
underneath.
App.
Yeah.
I will note, however, though, Michael, in terms of the back buttons, you know, both Safari and at least the music app, which are the two I was looking at, just use arrows. You know,
so descending.
No, I'm not saying, you know, that one way is better for another. I'm just saying in this one case, this is actually a win for this guy.
Well, but what I'm saying is they're not doing it. They're not using the word back. They are using arrows and they're making them different colors. They're in different places. It's one of those things where it feels to me as though they're trying some things, but I don't know. Back in the day, the human interface guidelines, that there was actually discussion of usability testing. And one thing I haven't heard is I've heard Apple talking about what they think they're doing, and I've heard people commenting on what Apple is doing, but I haven't actually seen any research that people were saying, yeah, Apple said we did this particular interface performed 15% better than the previous interface in actual formal usability testing.
That's what I would love to see as well. I would love to see some sort of research. But the other sort of thing is that there's two levels of usability testing that need to go on. Apple has to research and sort of vet, how well their interface guidelines work in the real world. But they're individual app developers in the real world, too. And I've worked for large software companies that do their own usability testing. And so they have to test how well their stuff fits into that environment and works with their users. So there's layers upon layers of that usability testing, and that's all very interesting, and I've seen no research on any of it. It's very likely proprietary, because that's important, valuable information.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I haven't read too much of this stuff yet, but Jacob Nielsen and Don Norman, and the Nielsen-Norman group, big usability guys from Apple's past. They publish a whole lot on this kind of topic, and it's fascinating to see what they come up with. I don't know if they've written anything about iOS 7 yet. May still be too new for that.
The fact is, to do good usability testing, stuff has to marinate a little bit, and you've got to try it with different populations. You don't need huge numbers of people, but you need diverse numbers of people.
So, Rich, how has the fingerprint scanner been working?
Oh, it's so nice. Look. Okay, wait. You click, you hold for a second, and you're in your phone.
That's pretty slick.
Oh, frabjous day. Oh, brave new world.
Do it with a finger. Oh, I probably shouldn't use that one. A finger I have not read. It doesn't let me in. But if I switch to one I have registered with, I'm in.
Nice. Hello.
I'm just waiting for them to, actually say, have Siri say, I see that you're flipping me off. Are you sure you want to do that?
Yeah. So it's, I'm impressed. It works really well. If I'm right out of the shower, it won't work. During workouts, it does work. Of course, that's only for my indoor ones. Anything outdoors, I'll have it in a case, which will not let me use the sensor. It works better than any fingerprint technology I've ever seen or used. Probably means in some ways maybe it is easier to spoof. I don't know for certain. I mean, certainly the techniques, though, I think it's pretty, not easy to spoof. You can follow some known techniques which have been published. But again, if you're going to be in that kind of a situation, you probably know it, and you can always turn it off. So, I'm going to turn the fingerprint reader off when I go to hacker conferences. I will turn it off when I'm in during international travel, because one of the issues that's come up a lot is, short of being tortured, you don't have to give up a password, but somebody can just take your fingerprint, a law enforcement agency, and get it into your device. Now, I don't do anything that I would be subject to normal law enforcement where I'd be worried about it, but if I go fly to Eastern Europe or China, I'm turning it off.
I have been just hearing some fairly disturbing reports of when you come back into the U.S., you have no rights and they can take all your stuff and, keep it forever. My gut feeling has been next time I leave the country, I'm probably going to, wipe large chunks of things off my computer before I come back in. And
I just use FileVault with a password and you don't give it to them. And if you're worried about it, there's other hiding techniques, but at that point, there's limits to what you can reasonably do to protect yourself.
We're
target of anything along those lines anyway. So I doesn't mean I approve of all of these activities. I certainly don't. But by the same token, the damage that can be done to me is pretty minimal if something was on there. So I don't keep my porn on my laptops. That's all magazines still.
Hard copy.
Retro. Yeah, so no, the fingerprint thing works great. The 5S, I love this thing. You know, it's a very subtle. So when you first get it, it is faster. iOS 7 does work better on it. Now, I mean, you guys know I'm ridiculous, so there's my 5. So it's not like I'm doing the major upgrade. It is most definitely noticeable. More subtle on mine than like my wife going from a 4S to the 5S. The overall look and feel of it, I have the space gray. I'm fine with that. I don't really care. The silver does seem to be the nicer one that people might go for. The fingerprint reader is amazing. The battery life I'm getting is, you know, consistent with what I had before. And I don't think I'm otherwise seeing most of the hardware changes. You really get the feeling that this is a platform for the future other than Touch ID, which gives you immediate feedback. I think as more of the M7-enabled apps come out, that could potentially make a huge difference. Now, I use a Fitbit, so I wouldn't necessarily trust this to be my pedometer because I don't always have it with me, or it's sitting on my desk, you know, charging or something along those lines. But I do think that could be interesting. Like I was looking at the Moves app, which has not been updated for the M7, but that actually gives you a timeline of your day and where you traveled and what the different locations are. And that's the kind of thing I think could be, you know, really, really, really interesting with it. I don't know. The camera is better. But mostly, you know, it's still not as good as my point and shoot, but I have a nice point and shoot.
I was going to ask Jeff, what do you think about, I mean, have you been using the new photo stuff in iOS 7?
I've been using some of it. Actually, I posted something on my blog last night because I...
The translucent leaf.
The translucent leaf, or backlit leaf.
Yes.
I was walking and saw, you know, a leaf that was changing colors and it had light behind it, and you know, I'm totally a sucker for that, so I got my phone out. Well, it was really windy, so you know, the leaf is like flap 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 flap, and so I tried to get a picture of it using the iPhone, and the only thing that I did was I kind of held the stem of the leaf so that it would at least be like within the frame. And then I used the
burst
mode. Yeah, thank you. Where if you just hold your finger down, the 5S shoots 10 frames a second. Mm. So I shot 20 frames. You know, with the okay, something decent will probably come out of that, and it was really good. I mean, the picture. If you go to jeffcarlson.com, the picture I posted the picture that was there. The only thing I did to that photo was crop it, because there was a lot of like sort of, you know, street in the frame because it was all flippy flappy. I didn't do any sharpening, I didn't do any color correction, I didn't do any exposure compensation, like none of that, and it turned out to be like much better than I expected. So
mode apparently tries to pick the best picture, and the one it picked for you was the one that you chose.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was on a 5S, Jeff?
It was a 5S, yeah. Yeah. The iOS 7 under other devices will also do the burst mode now, but you get like 2 frames per second or something depending on the model.
And I don't think it picks your picture for you. That's no. 5S smarts.
Yeah, yeah. It's the 5S hardware that's doing... all the work here, the processor and the image coprocessor and things like that. So, I've been really impressed with it so far.
And
if you have kids, by the way, you want slow mo. It's
oh yeah, yeah, slow mo is fun.
So cool.
I was thinking you wanted a burst mode so you could get them in between faces.
Both, yeah.
Yeah, it adds so much drama to your child's life. It's impressive.
So. You need drama in your child's life?
Well, they can generate it on their own.
So Jeff, I mean, the other thing that my thought with the burst mode is, I mean, when you certainly see, you know, serious professionals, you know, studio photographers, they're sitting there basically just holding down the shutter buttons.
Yeah.
And, you know, taking hundreds and hundreds of pictures and then picking out, you know, the one that's the best. And mm-hmm. It always slightly struck me as cheating.
There's cheating, and there's actually getting a good shot. And if you have to cheat to get a good shot, then it's all worth it.
It's all about getting the shot. The photographer still has to figure out how they want to frame it and pick the right one.
I mean, actually, what's great about Apple's implementation is because actually, I thought you were going to go in this direction, which is okay. Now I have 20 shots of this leaf on my phone, and you know, like, what am I going to do with all that? So the Photos app recognizes all of those as a burst, and it stacks them. So it's sort of like you have one thing, and so I can go in there and just tap that stack and say delete, as if it were one image, and it will say, do you want to delete 19 images, or because it'll keep the one that was the favorite, and you can also like choose other favorites, and they get sort of pulled out. But then you can delete all the others, so you're not going to like find yourself like, oh, I just accidentally, you know, shot 60 images of something because I held my finger down too long, and now I have to go and you know get them back. So
that's a really good thing to point out, Jeff, because I have an iPhone 5S on order, because when I went to wait in line at our Apple store, it turned out the one I wanted was already sold out. But while I was waiting in line, the AT&T guys were trying to help people feel good about the fact that they didn't have any more 16 gigabyte iPhones for sale locally in the store that morning. And he was saying that the new burst mode was just going to consume gigabytes and gigabytes of disk space, which which could be true, but it's good to know that if someone's sort of more aware of how to work with the feature, you know, you don't have to, like, if you spend a day at a museum and take a whole bunch of photos, you probably can very efficiently delete a bunch of them in order to, like, tap each one individually or something.
Yeah, definitely. They thought through not only how to get a shot, but also what to do with them, which, you know, sort of, again, points to Apple, like, actually thinking of how you're going to use it rather than, hey, we can take 20 shots or 10 shots per second or whatever.
The only downside, and it's a really minor one, but it should be pointed out, that on the previous versions of the camera app, one thing you could do is hold your finger down on the shutter, and it wouldn't take your picture until you released, and that would reduce the amount of camera jitter or jostle when you actually press the shutter.
That's
by
true.
Only having to lift. And now you can't do that anymore, because if you press down on the shutter, you're shooting like a machine gun.
Which was a lot of fun the first time I tried to do that. I'm like, okay, I'm going to line it up. Ah, what's going on? So, yeah, it's a really cool, and I've done a little bit with the dual flash. So the 5S actually has two little LED flashes, one cold and one warm, and it figures out what the right color temperature of the scene should be, and fires them to get a better result than most flash. I mean, you know, it's still a flash, and it's a tiny flash, and you know, there are better ways to get light, but if it's dark and if you need a flash, it does a pretty good job with the results.
Still, the best flash was always Barry Allen.
What? I love that show.
One thing I've noticed is, and I was just looking at some photos like I took today, and then I actually have to run after I say this, but I forget to use burst mode, and as such, in spots where I probably should have. So, like, I have a picture this morning of, you know, a little neighbor boy coming by to say hi to my daughter and give her first flowers, which, by the way, I totally do not approve of. And it's a little blurry, and I think had I used burst mode, I would have caught that better. It's just my habit is to tap that button, and so I'm trying to teach myself to hold down for at least, you know, a second, take the 10 shots, because it's so easy once you realize there's all those photos there, and you just keep the best looking one and toss the rest. I'm just forgetting to use it is what I've noticed.
Well, and allegedly, at least, you know, the way Apple described it, like when you take a single shot, it's actually taking four shots and combining them together to sort of get the good sharp view. I don't know like how to sort of verify that, because, I mean, none of this is exposed. You don't have any access to the raw sensor data. So, you know, the processor is doing a lot of work on your behalf to try to get a good shot. So, I mean, I think the only way to test that would be just to, you know, take a huge number of shots and just see if there's kind of a general higher quality. I'm sure somebody will probably, you know, rig up like a little thing where you've got a 5S and a 5 next to each other, and they can take shots at the same time, and that's too much work.
All right, well, thanks, everyone. I've got to run back off to work here.
But... Goodbye, right. Retro Man.
See you, Rich.
So, Josh, I'm curious, what have you been seeing in iOS 7? I mean, is it working for you, or are you wishing you had some of the stuff in iOS 6 back? What do you think?
You know, overall, I like it. You know, I'm used to trying out all kinds of new things, so, you know, I'm used to bugs, which that's okay. The one thing that's really grinding my gears is the iMessage bug, because I need that. I need my phone to work. The reason I switched away from Android to the iPhone is because I need my phone to work every time, and that is no longer occurring, which is a problem. I can almost forgive Apple for it, though, just because of Control Center. I happen to find it really useful, and it keeps me out of that blasted Settings app, which is set up like some kind of Johnny Ivy in Labyrinth. still, hopefully they will fix that at some point. But yeah, overall, I like it. You know, I noticed other little things too. Like there's an MG Siegler has been talking about this. There's a bug in Parallax where sometimes you'll notice if you hit the home button, you come out of an app, and if you look at your home screen, it'll shift a little bit. Like all the it's like all the icons, everything shift, and it's not a huge bug, but over time it starts kind of getting under your skin. It's kind of a weird detail for Apple to miss. Another thing I like in terms of design, you know, we're talking about the layers and talking about the translucency. One of the things I like, and that drove me crazy in iOS 6, was the linen texture. Because in the iOS 6 world, well, the texture is okay. It's actually pretty nice looking. The problem was if you pull up the multitasking bar, okay, it revealed, you know, underneath the interface, there's linen. But then, if you pull down the notification center, it's like, oh, well, linen's also on top. So I'm like, okay, well, is linen what's under the skin of iOS 6, or is it what's on top? Is it just surrounded in a universe of linen? So,
well, you put way more thought into this.
Yeah, well, the linen is a representation of string theory. You know, it's actually
old iPhone 3GS from iOS 6. You're right, although I had never noticed that in all the years of using iOS 6 that there was that, because, again, it's not functional. It's just I pull up the multitasking bar, it's there. I pull down Notification Center, it's there. I'm not worried about what's not there.
It's my OCD. I can't help it. I'm glad to finally see that sort of consistency. We've had a lot of people having problems with emotional. It's making a lot of people sick. I personally like the motion. Like I don't know, I'm a sucker for things like zooming into the folder because you kind of feel
a gamer, let's face it.
Yeah, well, I'm used to it. But I kind of like the sense that iOS 7 feels like its own world. And in a lot of ways, Apple, speaking of games, Apple has gamified the interface in a lot of ways. For instance, when you calibrate the compass now, you don't have to do the stupid waving it around in a figure eight motion anymore. Instead, there's a little ball, and you have to rotate the device to calibrate it. So it's kind of like a little game. And there's other little things like that, too, in the interface. So it's more fun in that regard. Yeah, as a gamer, it's I like it.
I actually think that I also don't mind the zooming in and out. Although I think they really need to speed it up because granted, you know, we're only talking like a few seconds or milliseconds, but switching between apps, you're like zoom in, zoom out, zoom in, zoom out. It's like, okay, we get it. We can speed this up because it just seems to go on forever.
Yeah, that's my feeling.
What I did on my iPhone, and actually this leads into a larger discussion, there's been a lot of talk about how hard it is to read iOS 7 text as opposed to iOS 6, and that's because they're using a new thinner font. But the other thing I discovered is if you choose the right home screen wallpaper, you lose a lot of those problems. What I did was I found this great NASA high-resolution photograph of the surface of Mars that was in black and white. And so I tinted it sort of like a Mars brick red color. So it's sort of dark but very textured. Mm-hmm. And you see all these rivulets and craters and stuff like that. But it's dark enough that all the text reads really well against that background. And I don't have any readability problems at all. I don't have to go to the special accessibility bold text to be able to see. But the other thing that I discovered, and this is purely geeky silliness, is the zoom effect makes it look like I'm zooming towards the surface of Mars or zooming off of it, and I feel like Buck Rogers.
Awesome.
Rocket Man.
You have to send me that wallpaper.
So here's a question. The people in your lives who have iPhones, have they upgraded to iOS 7, and do you recommend that they do so if they haven't?
The day after it came out, my mother, on her own insanity, because she is crazy, went out and installed, and I immediately got these panicked emails. I don't know how to make the thing do the thing because the thing is no longer doing the thing. That's almost verbatim what she wrote. And it took me a good 20 minutes to talk her off the ledge, and now she's happy as can be. But she lost one thing that she didn't know where it was, and that just caused her to panic forever. And so if you're dealing with people like that, no, don't upgrade until you can be sitting down with them.
People in general seem to hate it, I've noticed. I mean, of course, I live in Tennessee, so maybe it's just that, but the people on my Facebook are constantly complaining about it. This is, I don't know where to find things, I can't read stuff, this is making me feel ill.
Really?
Just nothing but complain. I mean, I might get like 1 out of 10 people say they really like it.
I like it.
I feel like people don't even like me as much.
What?
Like it's my fault.
Your fault?
Oh, Tanya, no, we still like you.
Like I'm in line, right? Remember I said I went down to the AT&T store to try to buy the iPhone 5S, but they sold out of the 16 gig models, so that's why I ordered one instead. So I'm in line, and I've been beta testing it, right? So I have iOS 7 already installed because it just was installed. So I'm showing it to people, and even the people in line are like, oh, I don't know about that. I'm like, you're in line for a new phone.
You don't have a choice.
Well, so, you know what?
And then I wrote this article for Tidbits, which is like everything you should do to get your phone ready once you've installed iOS 7, like everything you should check and everything you should look at. And I wrote this whole article, and I Facebooked it. You know, I did the thing where you like pin it up onto your Facebook account from Tidbits, and I wrote this little comment, Mom, Dad, relatives, and friends, I wrote this one for you, right? Right? Do you know how many likes or comments it's gotten? Zero. Nothing. If I post like some picture of my 14-year-old in a t-shirt, I get, you know, like 30, you know, woos. Nothing. It's like nobody.
That's how Facebook works.
Just nobody seems to have any interest in it. Plus my father-in-law, Adam's dad, will have to update to iTunes 11. Right?
It is right? So not happening.
So he's never gonna update it. He's never gonna update anything again, and it's just kind of tragic. So, but I mean, it seems like it does what it used to do. A few things have moved, whatever. Personally, I'm trying to like it. I'm trying to like the interface because I think it's just sort of helpful to like what you're working with, and I just can't seem to quite love it yet.
I think
it would help if my friends and relatives were like, whoa, it's so pretty. Instead, they're like, whoa, I have to learn something new.
Well, see, I think that's the thing. I mean, people are reacting to the change right now. And honestly, like, it is different, and I think it's like a lot of things where, like shut up and give it 2 weeks, and then make your judgment. Because,
right.
You know, like... You know, at first it seems a little weird, and now it seems completely natural, and for me at least. I mean, my mom installed it, and she loved it right away, and she's using an iPad 2. So it's, you know, which is not Retina. It's older, it's slower, and, you know, like, if anything, I thought that she wouldn't like it because it's I mean... iOS 7 really is designed for Retina. Oh, and also I think because the iPad version of iOS 7 is definitely more brittle than the iPhone version. So, you know, I was just expecting, you know, lots of complaints, and she's like, "No, I like it. It's really great." So, my experience has been people seem to like it.
You have better friends and relatives, more flexible, more adaptable.
Well,
they're more accepting of change.
That could also be that, you know, like the people on Facebook that comment on pictures of your son are probably there because they want to see stuff about your family and not your work, and you know. But I mean, you have to.
It is interesting. I think you're absolutely right, Jeff, that you've got to live with it for a couple weeks. And the reason why you have to live with it for a couple weeks, beyond everything else, is that a number of things functionally have changed in a fairly non-trivial way. So, for instance, Spotlight is no longer to the left of the home screen. It is, you know, you swipe down. You have to use Control Center rather than double bring up the multitasking bar and slide into the left. There's the controls for audio from the lock screen are not actually, frankly, quite as good as they were in terms of it loses track of what was playing. And so what I've found is that there's a lot of situations where I've got some muscle memory which is broken.
Yeah, definitely.
And I don't like that. You know, that it bugs me when my muscle memory is broken. I'll get over it. You know, I'm used to new interfaces, et cetera, et cetera. But I think for people who may learn more slowly or, you know, sort of not be as adaptable, that can be really troubling. And you know, it is a pretty big difference. In sort of ways you almost wouldn't suspect. You know, again, like the animations. I'm trying to avoid saying I don't like the animations because I don't like the animations, but you can't turn them off, and I don't want to have my iPhone irritate me every time I unlock the screen.
Right, and that's why, for instance, I was pressing a little bit. I'm like, why is it that somewhere, like, I don't really understand conceptually, like, why certain kinds of visual representations of what's going on, like an animation or a layer, are, you know, good in the New World Order, but other sort of visual representations of what's going on are, you know, bad. And it really feels to me like someone just said, okay, we got a whole bunch of visual representations, and some of them are new, and we're going to put them in the good column, and we're going to take these other ones and stick them in the bad column. Ooh. And I think if I really, really understood deeply why it's good, probably A, I could convince my friends and relatives better, and B, it would be easier to be happy and feel that it was good.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you feel that one of the problems is that it's not sort of completely unified? I mean, like,
definitely between the new apps and the old apps, and even within Apple's apps, what they're doing is very inconsistent, which, after being trained, and especially as an editor, oh my god, you have to use all these consistent words and all has to be consistent, it just feels jumbled up. So you're right, that's part of it.
Right, because, I mean, you know, there are aspects of it that have always been jumbled up, and I think there's definitely more of the elements that are coming together and being consistent. Certainly not all of them. I mean, personally, one of the things that is the biggest sort of interface surprise for me is if you are using the I can't remember what it's actually called, but the little in iOS 6, let's say you wanted to set an alarm. You had like the little three or four rolly spinny things.
Yeah, like an old-fashioned library.
Yeah, I don't like those.
Yeah, yeah. So which
the rotary picker.
Yeah, you know, like it was kind of chunky and ugly, but it got the job done. In iOS 7, I'm looking to see if I can actually find a good example here.
Yeah, look in the alarms.
Yeah, so
it's
so
just like something.
Here's
from
an
the
alarm,
world.
Maybe.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I use that.
Yeah. So it's still kind of the same functionality, but it just looks junky and crappy, and
Right, and I'm trying to buy this idea that the content is getting more focused. We're not focusing on like the interface. The content is beautiful and speaking for itself. I mean, I've read Apple's documents. I'm just not sure that the content is being beautiful and speaking for itself.
Well, and in that case, actually, I believe, and I haven't done like serious testing and graphics to find this out, but I actually believe that the interface targets in those rotary pickers are smaller.
They are, actually. Someone posted an article yesterday that really deconstructs the whole thing, and actually the targets are smaller. That there are some like in one column you can tap to select something, and another column you can't. So, right. You know, it's definitely, you know, dot zero jankiness.
It's the first draft of a new user interface is what it really is.
Yeah.
It's the first draft of a new user interface based partially on an old one.
We've been through this in Tidbits for people who read Tidbits exhaustively, but like in the camera app, you cannot tap pano or square or any of those little things down below. You have to slide on them to switch modes. And for a while, once you realize you can't tap, you think, oh, I have to slide on this very, very narrow little text thing. And then eventually you accidentally slide anywhere on the screen above the text thing, and the whole thing slides. You've got like a 2 or 3 inch slide zone, but you can't tap. And so that, Jeff, is sort of an example also of like weird tap zones or like what is with this. It's not like anything else.
See, to me, that was obvious. I just slid it. I didn't even think about it.
They used the rotary picture interface.
But why not let you tap? Like, why not tap on a word?
Because I think the issue is because there's so many buttons on the bottom. They don't want to teach people to do that because then you'll accidentally be taking pictures or turning filters on, and then you get annoyed either way.
Actually, they chose the rotary picker interface because that allowed them to put more options than could be displayed on the screen at one time as you slide across, whereas a button bar would not give you that functionality. The problem is it's not recognizable as a rotary picker, so you have to kind of learn that. The affordances are off on that.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. But the fact that they chose it is because they want to provide a wider range of options and let you know that there are options there.
Right, but then when you're over here in our little multitasking center, you can tap or slide. So it's just it just feels inconsistent, like just not as well thought out as the previous iOS, where it seemed like you didn't have to learn very much to have a few building blocks that would work everywhere.
True.
I will say though that, you know, from the time they started this process of re-energizing iOS with the departure of Forstall, it's been less than a year, and this is all very, very fast development, so it really is first drafting. Yes, it is inconsistent, and I have some problems with it, but it's not so bad that I think we should just throw it out and try again.
Oh, no. No, and I don't think it's terrible. I think it's more that, I was saying this to Adam at lunch, is that normally when a new version of iOS comes out, it's like more miracles in my pocket, or there's just something about it that really, really is neat. And with this, it feels a little bit more like, it's a 1.0, or I'm having more trouble figuring. It's not hard to figure out. I mean, it's not like I can't use it. I don't mean that. It just doesn't seem like it's quite up to Apple's usual standard.
Well, one thing I was going to say that I think is really somewhat troubling, and I believe Apple has simply done something wrong here, is that they made it impossible to switch back to iOS 6. That was possible for a day or two, and then they pull, I guess it's a digital signature which needs to be available for you to reinstall. Yeah. And I frankly think that's unconscionable, that when you make this big a change and you make it so people cannot go back, and we've seen these fairly significant issues, some of which, for visually impaired users, some of them you can tweak with the accessibility settings, others you can't. And then more troublingly, these ones for people who have various vestibular problems or motion sickness or whatnot, and the animations that you can't turn off are making people actively sick. Mm-hmm. And no, I don't think Apple should have anticipated that. I think it was a mistake. They obviously didn't intend this. But it is, I believe, really fairly unfriendly to say it is not possible to go backwards. They don't have to make it easy. They don't have to make it, not supporting it, but to make it actively impossible is just unpleasant. There. Said it.
Yes.
I cannot disagree. At the same time, I have to say I'm liking it and liking it a lot, and I have more of a feeling of miracles in my pocket than Tanya does. There's a lot of little things like FaceTime audio just, make me so very happy.
Oh, finally, yes.
Yeah, it is excellent.
It's just like, oh my gosh, I can make phone calls where I can hear somebody because I'm not at the tender mercies of AT&T in a very bad cell situation. I'm right in a neighborhood where any two blocks on either side of me, I'll get great cell reception, but not where I live.
Yeah, and, I'm in Michael's situation.
Like 4 years.
Base in audio has been wonderful.
Yeah, we've actually. And, you
know,
it's been
I know Josh is going to jump all over me because he hates the way the Notes app looks. But I love the fact that the paper looks very subtly like expensive.
It's skeuomorphic. Bar. It's still skeuomorphic. It's got the paper
I don't
texture.
Care.
And then it's yellow text. It's yellow on white. It's an abomination.
Skeuomorphic is not you know, Beelzebub.
Josh doesn't care, basically.
It's more skeuomorphic than the previous Notes app. And it's hard to read.
I know, but I still love it. I just think it looks pretty. But I used to go into stationery stores because I love paper. My grandfather had a print shop, and I loved the look of letterpress.
I don't hate skeuomorphism. Like, I actually like the stitching in the previous apps, but the problem is now is that stuff looks totally out of place.
Find my friends for the win.
Oh, man. One of these things is not like the others, and you open up Find My Friends, it's like, what? Whoa, what happened here?
You really do wonder sometimes why, you know, I mean, because, I mean, there's, you obviously Apple needed to update the included apps, but something like Find My Friends, you know, you wouldn't update that, you know, podcasts, you know, it just seems odd that these apps are still waiting for their iOS 7 redesigns.
I want to take one quick detour just to mention I wrote this article about iBeacons and the promise of them coming.
Yeah,
and I actually got a demo app. If you have two iOS 7 devices that are capable of using it, you can see what iBeacons look like in the privacy of your own home.
See, if I put my
really cool.
camera, will it work with yours? Sorry.
I set it up so I had my iPad working as a beacon and my iPhone running the app to see how far I was. And I would walk around my apartment. It would tell me I'm this far away, I'm that far away. When I went up and almost touched the phone to the iPad, it knew that I was very close, and you could see how that could work in sort of a cash register environment. It was really very, very cool just to play with it. The app is a total demo and doesn't do anything practical.
A practical use of iBeacon already is if you have an Apple TV that's been updated to 6.0.
Yes, yes.
One touch, you will set the whole thing up. Wi-Fi, iTunes, it's awesome.
That actually confused me at first.
Phone is close. It knows your phone is close and says, okay, give me the goods.
When Josh wrote some text about this that I was editing yesterday. When I first read his little chapter introduction, he said something about, you know, just touching, and I thought it was a typo, like what, iPod Touch?
Yeah.
That is really incredible.
Near field communication.
So the location stuff is going to become a really big deal because one of the things, I mean, Joe, who unfortunately can't be with us today, has talked about a lot is the lack of awareness. That, you know, when you're sitting here and you've got, you know, two iPhones and an iPad and your Mac and an alarm goes off or a message comes in, all these things go nuts. And part of the reason for that is that they don't know where you are, and you don't have any way of sort of saying this one is primary. And so with more location awareness, such as with iBeacons, I think that becomes a whole lot more possible in terms of, okay, you know, my iPhone has left the house. You know, as soon as it gets a certain distance from the house, it becomes the primary device and should get messages rather than my, you know, something else.
I can see the direction that that's going, and it is a clever end run around NFC technology.
Yeah.
Because it's much more plastic and malleable than that, and it doesn't require a special extra radio.
Yeah, and Bluetooth's already there. I mean, Bluetooth's, you know, in almost every Apple mobile device, if not every Apple mobile device. I mean, yeah, why add this extra chip when it's not needed?
Precisely. And Bluetooth low energy, you know, with having incredible battery life, is going to be a big deal as well. Mm-hmm. So I really think, I mean, I was very happy when you wrote that article about iBeacons, Michael, because it just, even though there's just nothing there today, or, you know, actually we've just gotten a couple apps since you wrote the article, it's just such a cool idea, and you can really see where it's going. You know, imagine it. I'll be curious if at Macworld Expo in March of 2014, change dates, if, you know, like, booths will have it. You know,
they will.
If they're smart, they will.
Yeah.
And if you go to a baseball stadium next year, it's going to be great.
Major League, should specify.
Yeah, Major League Baseball Stadium.
All right, well, I think we should probably wrap it up. Any final comments on iOS 7?
I think that my general advice to people has been, you know, like, if you want to update, that's fine. If you're really, you know, sort of scared of the new interface, then, like, wait until maybe a 7.1 just for some of the...
Or also just check it out on someone else's device. I mean, get a preview, because that's what you can't do is go back. So
that's true. That's true. Steal somebody's device, test it out. Oh, no, wait.
You don't have to look for it. Go ahead.
My advice runs contrary to my complaints. Obviously, I don't think people should update if it's going to make them motion sick or if upgrading to iTunes 11 is going to be seriously traumatic in the near term. But even with the complaints, I think that a skill that everyone has to have these days is adapting to new stuff, even if we don't love it. Okay, so don't update. That's fine. But sooner or later, you're going to want a new iPhone. Maybe your iPhone breaks or gets stolen and you need to get a new one. It's going to come with iOS 7 or iOS 8 or whatever it is. You're really realistically, unless you're like 110 years old, so you're almost certainly not going to make it another 5 years. You can't just sit there with old stuff, and sooner or later it's going to bite you because something you actually really want to do for like a trip or for your bank account or something like that is not going to work. And you're going to have to all of a sudden drop everything to install this and figure it out. And so that doesn't mean that the second you finish listening to me talk about this, you should hit the update button, but you should kind of think, okay, when's a week in the next month or two when I don't have a lot on my plate when I can update and take a little time with it? And it's just part of just kind of being a grown-up with digital technology. You gotta suck it up and try it, and you might love it. You just might love it, and if you don't, we'll be on to iOS 8 another year or two anyway.
Well, and also...
My best analogy is it's a lot like, you know, you have a car you've driven for years, and then you go get a rental, and yeah, you know where the skinny pedal is and the brake pedal is, you know, and the steering wheel, but the controls are all in slightly different places, and there's that shock of unfamiliarity.
And it
that
smells
can
fine.
Really make you uncomfortable.
Here's the danger for
it's
Apple.
It's good to
I
know
think.
Where the brake is, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but those
and the clutch. But I think the danger for Apple is people seeing iOS 7 and saying, this is so radically different, I don't like it. I might as well check out Android while I'm at it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even so I'm true. Tempted by that because I'm, you know, I'm fascinated by the idea of the Moto X being manufactured in the United States. You know, one of my problems with Apple's devices is they're made in China under some pretty awful conditions. Not that I'm planning on switching anytime soon, but it's tempting. It's, you know, and if I have that thought, and I'm pretty loyal to Apple these days, then surely other people are having that thought as well.
Well, one thing we've been running throughout this entire thing is with a fair amount of lack of success is Google Hangouts has this new Q&A section as kind of an app, and I think I finally figured out what it does, which is that when someone asks a question, it pops up in my sidebar, and I can select it. I couldn't figure out where to reply, but it turns out it's not a text reply. It's that I select it, and then I answer the question live. And
oh,
so
did someone ask a question?
So someone has finally asked a real question. We got a couple of spam messages from people with random names, and now our friend Alex Hoffman has asked, how many controls that you used to use are missing? For instance, he says, you cannot change the AirPlay destination without loading the app anymore. Ooh, and I have to click select. Okay. And I think the answer actually is you can change the AirPlay destination without loading the app. You, in fact, change the AirPlay destination in the control center now, which honestly is a little bit troubling. That, you know, you're kind of in your app trying to find AirPlay, and you can't. You've got to go to control center because it's no longer in the app.
I'm showing the screen right now. I clicked the AirPlay button in my control center, and you can see my destinations. And hello, Alex!
but
let's try to think of if there are some other things like that that have really gone away.
The closest
I
come
don't think
to
it's
that
gone away, though. Wait. Because that's... I mean, if I play something in my video app...
this is terrible. We're all on video staring at our screens.
It's a sign of the times.
We were staring at a screen before anyway.
You
I can still choose my
But in music, I don't think you can anymore.
Oh, who listens to music?
Video, but not in music.
Oh, okay, well.
Make it stop. So Control Center may be the answer to that. But yeah, I don't know why, for instance, the AirPlay is missing from the music app. And I thought it was missing from other places as well. The thing that I have noticed is that iOS 6 used to hold on to what the last playing music was better.
So yeah.
You could more easily control that from the lock screen. Now, if you go to the lock, start some music playing, you can go to the lock screen, double press to get the controls, you can stop and start and all that, and that works fine. But if you go back to the home screen, do something, and then lock again, you've lost that connection to the music. So you can no longer control it from the from the lock screen. And I find that, as I said, I'm pretty sure that worked properly in iOS 6, so that it would always know what the last music was, so you could always restart it a day later if nothing else had taken over the music in the meantime. So that's something that I find that's worse or broken.
You might, I'm just speculating here, Adam, you might be able to get back to where you were in music with Siri just by play music.
Well, see, for me, one of my problems is some of my audio is iTunes U, which Siri explicitly cannot use,
yes.
Says. But the, in general, I'm going from Downcast to podcasts or the music app for playing music. And so Siri's not tremendously helpful there. But I play a podcast. I don't play any other audio for the rest of the day. I want to get back to that podcast no matter what else I've done. I don't want to have to go reload Downcast, and that was missing there. So anything else people have noticed that is missing that they regret? I mean, for me, the muscle memory was the main thing. I'm trying to retrain myself to use Control Center and whatnot. But
one of the things that a reader pointed out in my article about the changes in the photos and the camera app, I had a little sort of sidebar rant about the slideshow functionality not changing, and it turns out that on the iPhone there is no slideshow button, which I thought that there was on the iPhone under iOS 6. So, that could just be a bug or something.
I'm pretty sure there is under iOS 6. Let me look.
So if you go to the albums, it's funny. I don't have any more iOS 6 devices currently.
Yes, there's a play button when you look at
Yeah.
There's a play button and it starts
and
that.
That's gone under iOS 7. So I'm guessing it probably just means that interface item went missing and will come back or something. But
they lost it.
I mean, I can't imagine that they would like tear out the code.
It's on a virtual index card somewhere, but it fell behind a desk.
Yeah, exactly.
The Apple TV does that. Like recently played in Netflix, sometimes it just vanishes. At first, I thought they removed it from the update.
Yes, confuses the heck out of it because recently played is all we use.
Mm-hmm.
So when we
We had to search for stuff for a couple weeks and then came back.
Barbaric.
Like, we don't even know the names of what we watch. It's just that particular picture.
Thing with the ball
guy.
What's
it called?
Yeah. My biggest complaint with iOS 7 is how spread out the keypad is now, which I think is Johnny Ive's way of saying you should buy an iPhone 5S with Touch ID. But the keypad...
Nice accent.
Thank you. The keypad for the passcode in iOS 6 was very tight, close together, and now entering the same passcode makes my hands hurt because I have to stretch my thumbs out so much.
That's actually like the main example of disrupting muscle memory because like that's all muscle memory. I saw a thing that I think it looks like that because now no matter what device... the circles are the same size as the home button.
Mm-hmm.
So,
whoa. or is it the same the same diameter as the Touch ID ring? That's what I'd heard. I haven't taken out a ruler or anything.
Same thing.
More or less. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Boy, I hope they bring Touch ID to new iPads.
Yeah, entering the code is so difficult now because your thumbs spread out even more.
Yeah, and I waste a lot of time just having my iPad here and I'm touching and I'm waiting and then I realize that I'm stupid because it's not Touch
ID. What point about slideshows, Jeff?
Yeah.
They are gone from the Photos app, but every iOS 7 device that's sold from here on out gets a copy of iPhoto, and Slideshow is in there.
Yeah, but that's like...
Yeah, I know.
That's another reason to buy an iPhone 5S.
It's a corporate kludge, but you're not completely without Slideshows if you have a new device, because you'll have iPhoto, and there they are.
See, I was speculating that you were supposed to play your Slideshows over to the Apple TV, and they weren't upselling a 5S. They were just trying to get you off the little screen.
They will upsell you to everything. That's
everything and anything.
Alrighty, well, we better get on with our other work.
I have
an article to publish about bugs in iOS 7, so with some of which we've talked about. So people can look for that.
Bugs like this?
Yes, bugs exactly like that. Little green bugs, but if you shake them, they light up.
It's a feature.
And they're completely flat.
It's a feature creature.
Okay, focus on Tanya's with your bug. There we go.
there's the bug. All right.
You go for a flat design by stepping on it.
All right. On that note, thank you for very much for all of the iOS 7 stuff, folks.
Thank you, Alex.
We will get this up on the Tidbits website. Thanks for the questions, those few people who asked them, and hopefully we'll figure out a little bit more of how to interact with this Q&A interface in a future time, since it's still a little hard to figure out. But in any event, thank you, and until next time.